Welcome to a place of rods, reels, line, and fish. You're about to enter the fishing zone.
I don't know, I like it.
Where did these things come from?
I did it.
Clearly you did it, but yes. When, why, how, what? There's many questions that need to be answered. Who is plain, the rest of it is not.
Well, it's my brain and it's not working very well. So, anyway, Fish and Frank here.
Captain Josh Olive over here.
All right, so we're each on opposite sides of the same table. And trying to figure out what's going on out there in the wide world of pescatorial pursuits. And I guess the thing to start off with, because today it's chilly out there, boys and girls.
When I pulled into the parking lot, my truck thermometer said it was 54. And I viewed that as a significant warming trend, because when I started it up, it said it was 45.
Yes, it was. When I got up this morning, I made a fire and coffee and sat in front of the fireplace.
I don't blame you a bit. This is our third morning waking up in the 40s.
Yes, and we did. I did two of them at the Bonita Boat Show, and it was a nice show. It's weird. The Bonita Boat Show, as far as a vendor goes, you know, I've been with John now for several years. He does those marine industry, you know.
John Good of the Southwest Florida Marine Industries Association, who runs their boat shows for them. That's what you meant to say?
That was what I meant to say.
And no problem.
The weird part about it is that what goes on over there is John, yeah, I don't know why, but something still happened in my equipment here, and I don't know what it is. But
I know you're getting louder.
Yes, I just got a little louder so I can back away from my mic a little bit.
Excellent.
What happened in Bonita, we do the Charlotte County Boat Show, which is an awesome show. It's literally Charlotte County's, you know, if you're around this area, that's the boat show to go to. It's got great boats, you know, vendors and all that stuff. It's a lot of fun. But the big one's in November. That's the Fort Myers one. And there's just literally thousands of boats. It stretches almost a mile along the Coosatchee there, and it's an amazing. Thousands upon thousands of people come, and they got all these different food and beverage places and boats from monstrous million-dollar yachts down to, you know, like rowboats. And then we go down to Bonita Springs, and it's a neat show at the dog track. And John does such a nice job of getting everybody so you can see everything and walk through the whole stuff. But what's weird is a vendor goes, every year we have two good days. We have one day that's shockingly bad. We have one day that's shockingly good. And two days that are good. And it's every year it's that way. And I have a curse in Bonita. It started us having to tie up. We have all those display boards, dozens of boards with thousands upon thousands of lures and stuff on them. And there we learned they can fall over.
Well, what they are is they're sails. You think it's a display board. The wind says, no, that's a sail.
Yes.
And I need to apply some pressure to that.
And we would always back them together, and we never had a problem. One day in Bonita, boom, one crashed, it hit another set of two, that hit the wall one, then started them falling, and literally tens of thousands of dollars worth of product just crashed down all over the parking lot, boards are broken, it's a nightmare. So we learned, stand a board up, tie it up, stand them up, tie them up.
Or alternatively, you could start filming that, because, you know, guys like the Three Stooges made a career on things like that.
And it was definitely a Three Stooges event, so...
Which stooge would you be?
There. I think Mo.
I think Mo in attitude, but maybe,
Curly
you look
Joe
a little,
and
you look a little more like Larry, actually.
Yeah, today my hair's a little wild. A little more like
I got to be Curly. That's the only one I can play. Sorry.
Okay, so got to love Curly Joe. All right, Curly Joe, not as much as Curly.
No, Curly Joe Dorita, even worse. Blech.
So anyway, this year we get down there, we're setting everything up, everything's going good, tying the boards up, and I'm standing this one up, it's got all the Eagle Claw hooks on it, and somebody asked me a question. I turned around to answer them, and it had been pretty calm. And all of a sudden, gust of wind comes, and smash, down on the ground it goes. So my Bonita curse continues. I got to have one board fall over and smash in the ground. Well, then, the next morning, I get there, and right from the get-go, I got a problem with the security guard. And I usually know all of them. They're amazing people, because security guards, it's a tough job. You don't get paid a lot of money. It's hard work, and you're responsible for millions upon millions of dollars worth of stuff. And, I mean, I literally end up, before it's over, almost in a fist fight with the guy. He comes over and tries shoving me around.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm come pull it in. And he doesn't know where anything is, doesn't know what's going on. I haven't seen him ever before. And usually the guys are awesome. Oh, you know where you're going? No. Okay, well, I'll go talk to John. Okay, mind if I park over there now? Go ahead. But with him, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. I had to back that big trailer mine up and then pull all the way around to the front of the show, find out where I'm at, which was like literally 70 feet from where he was standing. And so I wasn't happy anyway.
No, I bet not.
So I pull in. You know, and I said, okay, I'm just going to ignore this guy because, you know, the security guys, I want to just, you know, let's just avoid the problem. Oh, no, he won't let it go. And he's yelling at me all day. You got to do this. And you got to. I'm looking at him. But go away. You know, he doesn't work for me. You know, I don't care if he lives or dies. I don't like him, dislike him. Just don't care. Just leave me alone. And then the morning I pull in, Friday morning, I go to go through the gate. There's this little Hispanic guy there on the gate, nice as he can be, great guy. Go to open the gate up, and he's opening the gate, and this guy comes running out of the port-a-john, grabs me, and starts pushing me back out of the gate.
Well, really?
Yeah, well, let's put
Seriously.
It this way. He tried. He tried. And you put your hand on his chest and you go to back him up and you get your arm back, you know, you're measuring up for distance. And I give him this little thing. He goes back three steps. I'm like, okay, this is over. You know, this is going to be no fun whatsoever. So I grab the little concrete block he had behind there and I'm opening the gate up and he's coming at me and I'm just pushing him back with my left hand. I'm like, you know, if you're going to attack somebody, you should be, I'm 60-year-old guy. I'm in okay shape. But if I can fend you off with the fingertips of my left hand, you know what I mean? This is not even going to be fun. There's no challenge here. So now it's starting to get funny. I was very angry for, you know, 30 seconds. Scared, very scared for 20 seconds because you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, when somebody attacks you, you don't never know. And then it got really funny. I mean, and then I think I really upset him because now I'm laughing at him. And I think if you're a bully and you've got a bad attitude and somebody starts laughing at you, I guess that really
right, really takes the wind right out of you, crumples you right up.
Yeah, he's all with all this attitude going on. I'm like, really? I said, bud, you do realize for you, this might be a big thing. I said, tomorrow, this is just going to be a funny story for me. I mean, this is
to tell
is
thousands
nothing.
Of people.
Yeah, so it was just hilarious. But anyway, the boat show was awesome. They had some awesome boats, and they got that one Sandbar Edition boat. It's like Bay Tunes or something. It'll be here at the Punta Gorda Boat Show. You got to see this thing. I mean, Terry really wants to buy it.
This isn't the pontoon boat with the slide, is it?
No, it's not the one with the slide. This is an actual fishing boat.
Okay.
But it's really cool. It's 26, 27 foot. It's got three. It's all fiberglass. He made all the molds, and he cut up other boats to put this piece in and that piece in, and then he made it. And it's got this cool recliner thing in front of the center console. So when you're driving, people can sit there, and then it lifts up, and there's an enormous bathroom underneath. I mean, you could, you know, go in there and do the, you know, I don't know. There's not a mile high club. I guess it's a 6-foot wave club on something. I don't know. But anyway,
it's
a big bathroom.
Call it the sea level club.
Yeah, sea level. Okay. So anyway, it's big. It's just a beautiful boat. He's a great guy from Arkansas. But It's going to be over here at the Punta Gorda Boat Show. We're going to be there this week. The Punta Gorda
Boat Show is
nice.
For those of you who could not see Frank, he pointed towards Punta Gorda with his thumb when he said that.
Yeah, I did. It's because it's over that way.
We're there.
You know, I don't know. Isn't that amazing? You're on radio, and I'm just sitting here gesturing all over the place. You actually sit fairly calm.
Yeah, I have to. I do a radio show where there's three other guys in the studio, and there's just not room for gesturing, so you have to learn to sit still.
Yeah, okay. Now I know why I do this one. All right. 71 degrees in St. Pete, Gulf temperature. 71 degrees in Naples, Gulf temperature. Pensacola's at 66. That means King Mackerel should be back here again.
They should be. And I've been waiting to hear reports on him, and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and I'm hearing lots of people talk about Spanish. I was down at the Rockin' and Reelin' Seafood Fest in Punta Gorda yesterday while you were at the Bonita Boat Show. It was okay. It's a seafood festival that has seafood, which is okay. The music was actually pretty good. They had some excellent live music down there. I unfortunately can't remember the name of the bands because I was too busy focusing on talking to people about fishing. I do know that on Saturday, one of the performers was an Elvis impersonator. He did not look like Elvis. But as far as his voice went, he sounded like Elvis when he sang the crooning type songs.
Gotcha.
He's a very good Elvis voice for that kind of music, which is not my favorite at all. But
I know,
I'm
a huge Elvis fan.
I know you are.
I am a big, big Elvis
fan.
Well,
you could have been down there.
Elvis, Chuck Berry, two of my absolute idols.
You could have lined up with the old ladies and gotten an autograph, because that's what they were doing. He had a line 15 old ladies deep getting autographs and getting pictures taken with Elvis.
I actually have met many celebrities over my life and can honestly say I've never asked for an autograph. I mean, many of them way, way more well-known than the Elvis impersonator.
Yeah. Well, you don't know. You weren't there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have that genetic thing.
No, I get it. But it was pretty cool. I mean, did some talks down there, talked to a lot of people about a lot of fishing, and a lot of them wanted to tell me what they've been doing and what's going on for them. So I saw many, many pictures of Spanish mackerel on cell phones. Not one single picture of a kingfish.
Really?
Surprised me a little bit, because some of those guys said, you know, we caught these mackerel while we were out trolling in the Gulf, hoping to catch a kingfish. And they weren't finding the kings. They were finding some wangdoodle Spanish, though.
I'll be darned.
Saw one that was about 28 inches long.
That's nice Spanish. Now, a guy asked me while I was up there, he says, you know, all I can catch those Spanish mackerel and they're horrible. I said, no, they're absolutely a wonderful fish to eat. They have amazing flavor. They're easy to cook. I said, but the trick is you have to do it that day. You cannot expect to catch a Spanish mackerel, go out and I'm building a page because Bill sent me a cool thing about how to rig popping cork. So I'm building a page on the website about it. I'm going to attach it to the popping cork thing. I was just trying to get that last picture image to
right,
where it's
while you
to
were
go.
In the middle of other things.
Yes.
And now you had to explain the whole thing, which has taken us all out of the Spanish mackerel.
But
and again, people have
Spanish
no idea
mackerel,
what's going on with you.
The Spanish mackerel are such good eating. They're wonderful. It's usually if it's me and Terry, we'll keep like one fish or maybe two. With Spanish mackerel, they're usually under 20 inches. And used to be I'd keep one per person. Now it's three for the two of us, one and a half, because you're going to eat more than the one.
Well, especially because it is really a delicious fish. You're going to want to have more than that one once you start eating those things.
Now, I catch them. I put them on ice. I don't like if Spanish mackerel gets warm. I want no part of it. I put them right in the ice chest and leave them there until I get back to the dock. I fillet them out. And once I get the, you know, the fillet done and the ribs out and the skin off, you know, the meat off of the skin, then I take my fingers and I rub along the belly because Spanish mackerel have those little belly bones and you can almost never get them all out. So you got to be careful when you eat it. I always have the bread stack there. You know, I mean.
Now, when you're talking about the little belly bones, you're talking about the ones that are attached to the fins?
I don't know where they come from. It could be.
Yeah, because if you're careful when you fillet those mackerel, that you keep the fin bones out of the fillet when you're zipping along down that backbone. If you just make a little tiny upwards motion with your knife when you get to where that fin is on the bottom of its belly, that pointing down fin, you can usually avoid those bones altogether.
All right. Well, that's a great tip because I don't think I've been doing that. I've just been filleting them and haven't really been paying attention to that lower fins. And that's probably where they are because, you know, I always go with my fingers and I rub the fillet with my fingers because I can feel the bones much more than I can see them. So, and then I go through and cut them out. But now I have a real simple thing. I fire the grill up, get it hot, and I'm cooking the fillets whole because they're very even uniform thickness, you know, a little bit on the ends then. But I just take butter and I literally take a butter knife and I just smear. Now I use that olive oil butter, that Fleischmann's olive oil margarine stuff, because I really like it.
Blech.
And it's wonderful. It's really tasty. And I smear that across the fillet, literally with a butter knife. And then I take McCormick lemon and herb seasoning and sprinkle it all over that. Then I put the buttered side down on the grill. And it's only going to take a couple minutes to cook, because as soon as that side's brown, I butter the other side, a little more lemon herb seasoning, flip it onto that, and brown on both sides, done. I serve it, and we do a little bit of coleslaw, a little bit of some type of potato. And it's really weird with most fish, by the time you eat the other stuff in that, one fillet's good, not with that Spanish. It's so wonderful and so light. But if I use any more spices than that, you can't taste the fish. But now if I wait, and I've tried to keep them in the refrigerator overnight, I've tried them in ice water, I've tried freezing them, I've tried leaving them just in a Ziploc, I've tried all these different things, and they just are not as good.
No, and at that point, you can't really spice it enough to cover up the funky flavor that it's starting to get.
Because it does get a funk.
Very quickly. And I think the real problem that most people have with Spanish mackerel is not that they don't prepare it fresh. It's that they try to freeze it. And it just doesn't freeze. It's not the kind of fish you can put in the freezer, which is weird because king mackerel steaks, you can actually freeze those. They freeze okay. It's still better fresh, but it's okay frozen and thawed. Spanish mackerel, horrible frozen and thawed. It affects the texture, it affects the flavor, and not in good ways. But you're cooking them completely wrong.
How am I cooking wrong?
Well, you're cooking totally wrong. First of all, you took the skin off. And the skin on a Spanish mackerel is delicious. The scales are micro-fine to the point that you don't even notice them when you're eating it. And the skin has a really good flavor to it. So when I do my Spanish mackerel fillets, I zip them off the side. I make sure those bones are out of there. I cut that rib, the red line out on each fillet. I just make a little V-notch and rip that out of there and throw it over my shoulder, and a raccoon ends up eating it, I think. And just take that fillet, lay it on a cookie sheet lined with foil, coat it with Duke's mayonnaise, not like you're frosting a cake, but just enough to get a thin layer of Duke's mayonnaise on there. And yes, it has to be Duke's because that other mayonnaise is too sweet. Duke's doesn't have any sugar in it, so Duke's is perfect for this. Layer it with Duke's, and then sprinkle it with a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, and just a little bit, not too much, seafood seasoning. I like Old Bay, just enough to add a little bit of flavor to it. Put it in the oven on broil, and have it about 3 or 4 inches away from the broiler, and your mayonnaise will start to get brown and bubbly. And when you see it getting brown and bubbly, shut off the broiler, close the oven, and leave it set for 3, maybe 4 minutes. Take it out, and it is wonderful. It is amazing.
I can see that. I can see that being pretty good. Now, when I do mayonnaise, I'll try the Duke's because when I use regular mayonnaise, I don't like it. If I put a little mustard in with the mayonnaise, it's amazing. But mustard and mayonnaise to me was a great seasoning. But just the straight mayonnaise, yeah, I'm not thrilled with that.
Well, if you like mustard better than you like mayonnaise, try new mustard mayonnaise. I'm sorry.
Okay, whatever that was. All right. Anyway, getting back into where we're going, or whatever we're going.
Where were we going?
Spanish mackerel in the harbor, in the Gulf. Catch them trolling. Gotcha plugs are good. Small spoons are good. Casting. If I'm going trolling, I just throw a storm twitch, a small bomber. I take lures that are a little beat up, because if I lose them, I'm not going to care. I use cheap black steel leaders. I use them, just the little ones you buy pre-done with the snap on them. They don't pull that hard. You know, you got to be careful getting them in or you lose them, but there's not going to be a lot of pull. I just back my drag down. I use the cheap steel leaders in black or red. I never use silver on them because they strike the silver leaders. They hit the silver swivel. Less likely on the black or the red. And, you know, I land a lot more fish that way and I don't lose as many plugs. But with the little cheap steel leaders, now I try and avoid the snap swivels that have that little flat metal piece on it. And I try to go for the dual lock. It's just wire all the way around. And it doesn't create the cavitation or try and steer my lure one way or the other. Some of those snaps, they have that flat piece on them, like the... you know, the regular snaps
it's
and the little
black ones.
It's just stamped
metal where it's folded around to hold the whole thing together.
And that
and
causes
it's a keel.
Yeah, rudder action, a keel action, and it cavitates a little more. And I find it's better if I use the dual lock snaps. And AFW's got one they put the dual locks on. And that's the one I usually use. It doesn't affect the action of my lures. It actually, some instances, I almost think enhances it because it gives it a lot of play off that dual lock snap. But that's how I like to do the Spanish. Now, one thing that usually comes in right about the same time as Spanish is tarpon. And a week ago, we were inundated with tarpon. They just came in from everywhere. Now, I don't think a lot of people realize that tarpon is only, they're only wintering 1 to 2 days swim away from here.
For the most part. I mean, we have tarpon that overwinter in the Keys that get back up here pretty quickly, if they want to. Usually they take their time coming up. They come up through the Everglades area and come up through the 10,000 Islands, and guys start catching them down there a few days to a few weeks, depending how the weather goes, before we start seeing them here in Charlotte Harbor. But if the conditions are right, all they have to do is keep swimming, and they get here very quickly.
Well, they don't really have anything else to do.
Most of the time.
You know, they're going to go out and swim, so what's the difference? You know, swimming here, going there, you know, food is food, you know, and okay, let's go traveling. But now some of the tarpon do come from Texas, Louisiana, Mexico.
We get tarpon from all over the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean, and the Atlantic Basin. We've actually discovered that some tarpon that come here to spawn in Boca Grande Pass come from the coast of East Africa.
Really?
Now, all the way over there by Madagascar.
I have been out grouper fishing many times and out there in the Gulf, way out. And I always say at this time of year, it's kind of nice because if your GPS went down, your compass broke, and you didn't know how to get home, because you don't want to just run the boat because you'd be driving, you know, you have 1 in 4 chance that you're going to be heading in the right direction. You could be going west or whatever. But if you see a pod of tarpon coming across and they porpoise right across the surface when they're traveling, and you can literally watch them come, and you could just follow them right to Boca Grande Pass, you know, at this time of year.
That's a wonderful tip to remember if I'm ever floating around out there.
If you're ever floating around in the Gulf, you know, and let's say you're shipwrecked and you're out there, you know, trying to survive, and you can grab onto one of those tarpon, he will drag you right to Boca Grande Pass.
What you do is you build a lasso out of sargassum.
That's it. You weave a lasso out of sargassum grass.
Get one of them by the tail and off you go.
Yeah, just right over his head. Just catch him right behind the, you know, right in front of the dorsal, and you won't do any damage. He can just drag you to Boca Grande Pass.
Mm-hmm.
Save your life that way.
I got lost in the weeds on this one.
Well, you started this sargassum lasso stuff.
Well, you're the one who was saying I need to use tarpon to get back to Boca Grande Pass. Why can't I just use my compass?
Well, I said if your compass broke and your GPS burned up.
Both together?
Right.
There was
just a calming moment. Let you hear a little drag music. So
is that what that was? I thought that was 10,000 mosquitoes trying
know,
to break the door down.
It was a horrible drag sound. You know, I don't know. But, hey, what the heck. We're out there. We can, you know, just... Now we can pretend we're on
That's better.
A river voyage.
So this cool temperature that we're having is not really affecting our water temperatures a huge amount. It's dropped it a couple degrees, but we're supposed to swing right back up into warm temperatures again. Now, we've got a front that's coming through on Wednesday. It's going to drop us down a little bit. We might see our water temperature push all the way down to, what do you think, about 70?
And which would be awesome. That would be great, because one thing that we always wanted to get warm, but we cannot afford for it to get warm too quickly. Otherwise, by June, usually July, we've got an oxygen problem in the harbor because hot water doesn't hold oxygen. So this year, it could have been May or June when those oxygen levels would get just too low from the heat in the water. And I think this extra week or two of cool air is going to keep us good for a lot longer.
It will definitely help the fishing in the upper harbor. There's no question about that. So maybe we'll actually have one of those years where fishing in the upper harbor stays good until we really get our rainy season going, and that starts to drive the bait fish further down the harbor. At least we can keep our fingers crossed and hope for that. But the good thing is, I don't really think that this temperature drop is going to affect the tarpon too much. Because, like you said, all they do is swim a day south, and they get back to where they've been overwintering, where the water temperatures are noticeably warmer in the Keys. So it's very easy for them to hop back and forth between those two spots as water temperatures change. And they want to be here in Charlotte Harbor. This is the mecca for tarpon. This is where the big spawning aggregation happens there in Boca Grande Pass. This is where the babies grow up here in our mangrove swamps that we have ringing most of the harbor, in those little shallow stagnant areas where nothing else can live except for mosquito larvae. And did you realize that mosquito larvae are a major prey item for baby tarpon?
I would have assumed, but I was down at the Bonita Boat Show, and I'm talking to this guy about these little tarpon and trying to explain to him that if you have a lure more than 3 inches long, you can use a quarter-ounce rattle trap, but a half-ounce rattle trap is too big. You've got a definite size ratio. You got to get smaller in order to get those tarpon to hit. And, you know, it's funny because his argument, well, that's not what I'm using.
Oh, that's a good argument.
I'm using, you know, these tarpon are bigger. I'm going to need something bigger to catch them. And I said, well, you catching them? No. All right. So if you use, why don't you try something a little smaller? But those tarpon are bigger. And I acquiesced and said, okay, what would you like, sir? he bought.
Give me
like
a hoagie.
$30 worth of lures to go catch these little tarpon. And I actually honestly tried to, you know, for several minutes explain to them that they're not like the tarpon in the harbor. As soon as you get out in Charlotte Harbor, you want a bait buster. I want a 16 bomber. I want a bigger lure, bigger presence. A king mackerel spoon works great. But as soon as you get in the canals, you got to think tiny.
Because these tarpon that have been coming out into the canals grew up in those mangrove swamp areas where the water is very shallow and it's very stagnant. There's very low oxygen levels. Most other fish can't survive in it. So they don't grow up eating other fish. They grow up eating insect larvae because those insect larvae can also breathe air just like the tarpon can. So that's really all that's living back there. You know, maybe a crab will occasionally drop down into the water and they might get a hold of that, but most of the time, insect larvae are going to be their main food source. So when you grow up eating little tiny things like that until you get to about, let's say, 8 to 12 inches long, which is when we start to see them show up in the creeks, then it's not really a surprise that small tarpon have a preference for little teeny tiny baits.
You know, and it validates, you know, all this stuff I've been trying to tell people, because I discovered it by accident. Trial, error, catching these little tarpon. And I've been teaching people, you know, ever since there was a big tarpon thing a while back. And I said, you know, I'm okay, because I didn't teach people how to catch the little tarpon for a long time. But now I've been teaching people for the last few years. And it validates what I found by accident. The hypothesis that you have about eating, you know, were they eating insect larvae and stuff like that, that makes what I did by accident make sense.
I agree with that. Understanding a little bit about the biology of these fish really helps to inform us as anglers and makes us better fishermen. You know, it's one of the reasons why when I do talks, one of my staple talks is on what fish actually eat out there in the wild, because so many people have this idea that, well, when I go into the bait shop, everything looks like a white bait or it looks like a shrimp. So there's probably fish are eating mostly white bait and shrimp. But when you talk to them about what fish actually eat and they start understanding things like, you know, redfish, one of their favorite foods is clams that they dig up out of the bottom. They eat huge amounts of marine and aquatic worms that they dig up out of the mud. They eat starfish. They eat sea urchins. You know, yeah, they will eat white bait occasionally. Sure, they eat crabs. They eat shrimp when they come across them. But there's actually a huge number. They do. I've cut open a redfish and found about two dozen little, they're not oreaster starfish. They're the little oyster starfish that we get here in the harbor that maybe grow to 2.5 inches across. Just gotcha. A stomach full of them. And all ground up and crushed up. You can see that they'd been through his crushers and gotten ground up pretty good before he swallowed them.
Well, it's pretty awesome. I mean, to sit there. Okay, I am having a hard time picturing myself going out and catching these little starfish and using them for bait.
Well, that's true. It's a weird thing for you to try to use for bait, but getting an understanding of all the different things that these guys eat out there helps. The starfish doesn't help so much. The sea urchins doesn't help so much. Worms does.
Is it possible to use a starfish for bait?
Sure, it's possible. It would be difficult. You'd have to find the starfish. You'd have to collect them. And their bodies are harder than most people think. The starfish that we have here are almost armored in the way that they are, and you'd have to push pretty hard to get a hook through it. Plus, it's not going to cast very well. You know, with all those arms spread out and casting into the wind, just not going to work.
I was just thinking, you know, we're talking about starfish, and somebody's actually going to bring up the question, is this a viable bait? And I've gone out and seen sand dollars and starfish, and I've caught hundreds of them in the cast net over the years. But it's fairly rare. You know, you get one here or two there. Now, if you were out and you caught a small starfish for bait, keep it, toss it back.
I'd probably toss it back. But if Savage wants to develop a starfish lure, I am totally in favor of that.
It was funny. Somebody asked me, you know, with Savage at the show, have you ever heard of this duck? And I'm like, man, I have no idea. I've never heard of that. Turned out it was the Savage duck. I had him on the wall right there. I said, well, I don't know about that duck. I don't think I've ever heard of that, but I got this one here. And then I looked on the box, and on the side it had that additional name that he said. I was like, oh, got him right here.
But this kind of stuff.
See, I got stuff I don't know I got.
What we've been talking about with some folks about that crayfish lure that you're so fond of now, that soft plastic crawdad.
Oh, the Strike King Rage Craw.
Right, yeah. Which is an almost perfect imitation of a pistol shrimp or snapping shrimp that we have out there. You know, and that's a huge favorite food for a lot of our redfish and our snook. They just go for those things in a big way. So it's not a surprise that that works really well.
Yeah, I was actually, you know, thinking about it, it's actually a, it would work.
Yeah,
okay.
It does work.
So
I don't know what
anyway. I was going somewhere, but I decided I didn't want to go there.
Fell apart with it. So what do you want to talk about here? You want to talk about those little tarpons some more? You want to talk about what fish really eat? What's your preference, Frank?
No, wait a minute. You're co-host. This one's on you. I started the other one.
I'm asking what you wanted to discuss, because we could totally do either one of those things. If you leave it up to me, then my next move would probably be to discuss some lures for those little tarpon and see what we could start casting with.
Let's do that. All right. Hang on. You know, there's so many things that go on out there, and the tarpon you're talking about are notoriously, I love them because they make people crazy. They walk outside, or they're going down a boat in a canal. Pirate Harbor has bunches of them. Now, you can do them on flies, but I recommend smaller flies. My favorite fly for fishing those tarpon is the teaser from our pompano jigs.
And again, you pointed with your thumb. Thank you for that.
I was letting you know that they're right there outside the door. I can see them from my chair. Hey, Jackie. And those teasers. They're little tiny teasers, but they work awesome for those little tarpon.
And there's nothing to it. It doesn't breathe in the water. It doesn't pulse. It doesn't nothing. And it doesn't have to.
So I went with my first pick for these little tarpon is a very old lure. I'm an old man, so scrappy, but I'm old. All right, now, let's see. 4M11. A 4M11 mirror lure, you know, predates all the MR17s and everything that you guys fish with. It goes back to the 52s, the TTs, the 7Ms, the 5Ms. It's a much smaller version of it. It was one of the first artificials that I caught those small tarpon on. Because it's maybe 2 inches long, but it's fairly big. It's fairly heavy. You can actually cast it. Have you ever even seen this, the 4?
I have seen it,
the 4M?
Yes. I don't know that I've fished one of those in a long, long time. But I used to fish mirror lures quite a lot, and not just in saltwater, but also in freshwater.
Yeah.
I used to bass fish with mirror lures a lot.
I carried that 4M for years, and like you said, I used it in the Gulf catching different things. I've used it in freshwater, saltwater. The little 4M was very, very versatile. I did the 4M11 and the 4M18, two of my favorite older lures. The only two of the 4Ms I still keep in stock.
It's a good choice, but you know what I don't like about this one is that it sinks a little bit too fast for what I want to do. A lot of times these little tarpon, you'll see them rolling at the surface. They're usually not feeding right on the surface. They're usually feeding down a little bit deeper. So this can work in getting you down fast, but it tends to want to keep sinking and sit all the way down on the bottom. And it just goes down a little bit too far for
me. It falls 1 foot per second in salt water.
So I have a lure that's very similar to that, the Miradine Mini. Not the 17MR, but the 14MR. And if you look at them side by side, which I'll show you for your own personal benefit, you can see that they're actually pretty close to being the same size. It's not too far off. But for the same reason that you picked this one, it's a small lure that has a little bit of weight to it that you can actually throw it. And the hooks are not crap, which is nice. You have some hooks on there that are actually decent when you hook into that slightly larger than you expected tarpon, because these fish we're casting on, they're maybe going to be somewhere between 5 and maybe 20 pounds. Every now and then you'll see a fish in there that's 30, 40, maybe even pushing 50. And if you hook into one of those bigger guys, if you've got good hooks like these, then you actually have a chance to land that fish. With a lot of these lures that are the right size for small tarpon, the hooks are not going to be any match for those bigger fish.
No, you're exactly right. But mirror lure uses, they're not a, the regular round bend that comes on most lures is a single X standard strength. But mirror uses a 2X. They're not actually 4X, but they are 2X. It's actually a hook made for mirror lures. And a little stronger than the standard hooks that lures come with. Any of them that have that silver looking hook on them, if it's the black hook, it's a 1X, but if it's a silver hook on it, it's actually a specially made mustad that's a 2X.
And it's smart of them, because mirror lure knows what people are going to be doing with these baits. With a lot of the smaller lures that you see, the manufacturers are not expecting you to go out and try to catch larger fish, but mirror lure understands, hey, these are meant to imitate small saltwater
bait
fish.
Have you met Eric?
I have.
All right, because Eric Botnick, the owner of Mirror Lure, will be at Fish and Frank's tent sale March 24th.
And I'll be thanking him for putting heavier hooks on these baits, because it makes life so much easier when I don't have to try to swap them out.
Gotcha. Now, just staying on the Mirror Lure trend, I picked one also, a 9MR. It's a longer version of the one that you have. I like it because it appears more like a glass minnow.
Right.
Now, the one that you have appears more as a white bait, but it could be more similar to a molly or something like that. The 9M mirror lure is, and I did the 18 color because it's still one of my favorites, the green back, white with the silver bellies, stuff like that, or white, silver, white belly. I think it's an awesome one for there. All three of them use the same action. Cast it out with the two, the first one I have, the 4M, I let it sink because I'm going to use that when those tarpon are coming up, kind of flipping their tail and really going down farther. And so I let that sink 2-3 seconds before I close the bail and start to work it so I can work that one deeper. whether it's the 14 or this one, the 9, I tend to work those. I cast them and let it sit for just a second, and then I'll start working it right away. And it's working in the upper 2 feet of the water column. Tiny twitches to the rod. Tink, tink, a little tiny flick, flick to the tip. But I want a lot of movement without a lot of forward motion.
Right. The goal here is to be subtle. I think of it kind of like you're working a topwater plug, but like you're working that plug past someplace where you think a fish is hanging out. You know, if you're working a topwater past a dock or something like that, you want to get plenty of motion, but you don't want to bring that lure past the dock too fast. So keep the rod twitching and reel a little bit less.
And that actually works out pretty good. Now, if I was going to pick out the little mirror lure, and then the quarter ounce rattle trap. I went black and silver. I do that and the tiny trap, but this black and silver quarter ounce was one of the first few lures I found that worked. And what's amazing to me was I thought, well, if that one works, the half ounce will work that much better. And no, I've gotten hits on it, but I don't know that I've actually ever caught a fish on a half or a canal tarpon, not a fish. I've caught a lot of fish on them. Don't think I've ever caught a canal tarpon on a half ounce or three quarter ounce rattle trap. But on the quarter ounce, I actually catch them and it works.
Because it's small enough to get the job done. Now, I've also got a rattle trap here, but mine is the tiny trap. And mine is not going to be so great if you accidentally hook into one of those larger fish. But I like this tiny trap because the smaller tarpon really seem to go crazy for this little size. And in this one, I've chosen a specific color. The color is grub. And you would think, well, why would you pick a grub color for tarpon that are in there? And it's because when you look at this bait, it has a yellowish cast to it and it has vertical dark bars on it. And what it looks like to me is not so much a grub as a baby tilapia. And we also see some baby tilapia in those canals because the salinity is not stupid high and they move up into those areas. It's a protected area for them. Tilapia do spawn in some of those canals, even though there is salt content in them. Tilapia actually come from soda lakes in Africa where they put up with water temperatures well into the hundreds, and with salinities that are sometimes double what you'll find in the ocean. So tilapia can withstand extreme conditions, and they will spawn in those conditions also. So this looking like a little tilapia, it's a natural food source for those small tarpon.
Now, one thing about the tiny trap that I have not tried is replacing the rear treble with a single hook. And I think that's something you and I need to go out and actually see if it's going to work or not.
I've already played around with that idea. If you're replacing the rear hook, it tends to mess with the action of the bait. But if you replace the front hook, then it kind of rotates around that axis still. If you look at this lure, you'll see that where you attach your line and the first treble hook forms kind of an axis that the bait can rotate around. If you replace the rear hook with something that's heavier, it slows down the vibration. If you replace the front hook with something that's heavier, it doesn't have that problem. So what I've done with some of these baits is taken a larger hook and put it on that first split ring, which again is kind of challenging to do because this is a very small lure and it doesn't want to have a bigger hook on it. But if you make it happen, you can make it happen.
Gotcha. Now, for me, I'm going to go to the XR6 Rapala, the X-Wrap. And I like, it's one of the few times I choose, did you get one?
I did.
I get a Fire Tiger.
I got this hot orange one.
Yeah, we'll see, we're both going, this is green, black, yellow, and orange, and we're kind of on the same page with that. The little X-Wrap in that 06, it's one of the few that I actually use that dual lock snap to take it on and off when I'm using these little lures, because the little X-Wrap is a suspending bait, more or less, but it's awesome on those little tarpon. But if you put the knot of your leader, and I'm using 20 or 25 pound test, that knot takes up a lot of the bill, so I don't get as much action out of it. So I find by putting the little 20 pound dual lock snap on there and then tying, you know, putting my leader in front of that, I actually get better action out of this, more depth, more wiggle.
Yeah, and you can do that, or you can tie a loop knot. I think Rapala actually recommends the Rapala knot.
Yeah.
They're funny that way.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
This orange color, I chose it specifically to imitate another type of bait fish that those tarpon are going to see in these areas. It's a sailfin molly and also a fish called a rainwater killifish. Both of those fish have noticeable orange on their bodies. The sailfin mollies, the males have bright orange red heads when they are mature adults. And the rainwater killifish, they have orange on their bellies during their spawning season. And the fish go after those males more often than they go after the other fish because the males are so focused on their spawning activity that they don't notice when they're being snuck up on by a predator. So those fish get
eaten. I can relate.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Yep. So they make good prey, and that orange color indicates that, hey, this one is probably a little bit easier to sneak on because he ain't focusing on you.
That's where the security guard made his mistake when he jumped on me. Was he should have got me at another time, not while I'm driving to drive through a gate. I was pretty focused. All right. Just, I got to tell you, I don't know how this stuff happens to me.
You're a magnet for it.
Yep.
Just the way you work.
Now, what else do you have there?
Well, I have a three soft plastics here, and I know that you have at least one of them that I have, and that's this cream little fishy.
Okay, that is the number one. It is, I'm going to say, the best lure, period, for two things. One, canal tarpon. Two, snook on the lights.
Because it imitates a very small bait fish and because it has a lot of motion to it, this lure is designed unlike any of the others that we see here in that it's got two scoops on either side that force the tail back and forth. So in a tiny little plastic body, you don't usually get a lot of wiggle. You don't get a lot of motion out of it because it just can't wiggle that much. But the way this one is designed, it forces the tail to have lots of motion. So it forces it to create sound in the water by making vibration, and the fish really key in on that. And it's tiny.
It's like going back to the disco days. It forces you to put a lot of motion in your bottom.
Those hips, they really go.
Yeah, you just boom, 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 boom. You know, it's sometimes you got to do what you got to do. All right, the little fishy jigs, whatever color you like, they come in two sizes, maybe three. We've got another big order coming in. I've got quite a few right now. The problem with it is getting a decent hook so that when you cast them out, you can actually catch a fish. And a regular jig head is not going to work. These
it's
are tiny, tiny bodies.
At all. Not only will it sink way too fast because you don't have any water resistance from this tiny little soft plastic, but the hooks are way too big. You're just never going to make it function right.
So what did
that's
you pick?
That's why you need
the larval
jig.
Jigs. Yeah, the snapper jig, the larval jigs.
That's the one that you want.
Yeah.
And
what
when
color
I rigged
did you
that,
pick?
I picked the white one.
I got the pink one. Okay.
Either one works.
I did white with black back and the pink jig head. What did you do?
I've got white with black back, but I also really like the yellow one. There's a yellow one with glitter that's really cool.
The yellow one's pretty
and
awesome.
And again, these are the smaller size ones. They do come in three sizes, 1.5", 2.5", 3.5". The 1.5" is going to be my go-to for this kind of stuff. I do like the others, but not so much for
these
little
tarpon. I think
that
larger one I want to take out. I'm going to try that again on the flats. It was hugely popular about 10 years ago, and we just selling tons of them, maybe even 15 years ago. And then they faded out of fashion. And it might be a time to put a comeback on them. One thing I like about the company, the parent company, Cream, is old company, based here in the U.S., has long history in fishing, and literally was one of the first soft plastic bait companies, started out freshwater worms and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they've been around forever.
And nice folks.
They did fall out of fashion for a while, and I think that they're grateful now to have some resurgence in this business. And us discovering these lures, which were made for panfish, and realizing, hey, wait a minute, you can go out and you can catch some bigger fish on these. I think that's a whole different marketing avenue for them that they never would have thought of.
Well, actually, 15 years ago, not with the tiny ones, that was the crappie bait, but with the larger ones, they were enormously popular on the flats. I mean, we carried a full lineup of them. And for about 3 years, which is a pretty good run for a lure, they really ruled the saltwater flats market. and this was before we started carrying a lot of the DOA and stuff like that. But maybe it's about time to get some people talking about, get some of the bigger ones back in and try it again.
I agree.
Because it's been long enough where everything old is new again.
And it does have a motion that's unlike any other lure that's out there. And that's such a key thing when everybody is fishing the same kind of bait. You know, the DOAs, they work fantastically, but there's so many different imitations of those baits that it's sometimes harder to catch quality fish on those lures because fish have seen them. So that's part of why things like that live target swim bait with the very different tail on it, the egret baits with the different tail on it that fish hadn't seen, it's a vibration they hadn't felt, that stuff works really well.
No, it's actually very, very true. There's no doubt about that. You know, every few years, everything's going to change, and then it comes back. It changes, it comes back. It's kind of like bell-bottom pants, you know.
Do you know what's coming back?
What's that?
Members-only jackets.
I have no idea what a members-only jacket
is. The stupid nylon windbreaker-looking things, except it's slightly fancied up a little bit more. They were big in the late 80s, early 90s. Okay, wait a minute. Have you heard of Zubaz pants?
Nope.
You don't know Zubaz either. Okay, another thing hot in the early 90s, these stupid, ugly, baggy workout pants with zebra stripes on them.
Nope.
No, okay. Well, somebody knows what I'm talking about. Those are two things that were out, so far out of fashion, that are coming back in again now, and it's horrible. And when you see the two things together on somebody, it's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And, of course, now it's on somebody who has a beard down to his belly button. And
a bun on his head, I'm
sure.
Yeah.
And the big spacers in his ears, so the size of a dinner saucer. Oh, it's ridiculous.
I can get along with the ear stuff and the beard stuff and all that, but the man bun thing?
Not down with it?
Yeah.
I thought that's why you were growing your hair out.
And I'm really, you know, a fan of the guys who are wearing their pants down below their butt, you know, around there, because I think anything that can be that annoying to people my generation, you know, the younger kids coming up, that's perfect. That's what young people should do, is be really annoying with that. You know, you got to get something that makes the old people just cringe. And that was perfect. You know, they wear their pants around, you know, their butts falling out. They got weird underwear on, hopefully. But I said, you know, that's perfect. That's exactly what young people are supposed to do. Find something that really annoys older people. But the whole bun thing, I mean, it's not even annoying. It's just sad. I mean, I just look at it, I feel so bad. You know, like, gee, you couldn't, couple of things didn't grow quite right for you. Is that the problem?
Man buns.
Yes.
I don't know. I think we're just on the beginning of that.
So
kind of
anyway,
stuff.
I hope not. All right. Anyway, getting back into the fishing, snook fishing doing very well. A lot of smaller snook. Not as many slot snook as I would have thought, because I saw so many snook at the beginning of the year, middle of the year. It was just amazing. And then I would have thought we'd have a lot of slots fish now.
And the people I've talked to who have been catching slots have been working hard for them. You know, they are turning up, but these guys are weeding through 30, 40, 50 fish on just the upside and just the downside of the slot to get that keeper.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what, you know, how it, you know, came about or what happened with the snook, because we were catching a bunch of monsters on the fall season, September, October, catching a lot of oversized snook. I'm not hearing about those, but I'm hearing a lot about short snook. Now, maybe it's because it's not quite far enough yet. That might come in because we got snook season for March and April. And somewhere in April is usually where we're going to start seeing those bigger snook, because they start heading out to the Gulf to spawn.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is that it doesn't seem like there's necessarily a shortage of those bigger fish out there. It's just a shortage of people being able to catch them. Because I've seen some stuff from one of the guys who I know really well who fishes down at the south end of Boca Grande all the time. And those docks on the south end of Boca Grande usually stack up with snook just ahead of the spawning period. Those docks are already stacked up, and not with fish that are going to be sub-slot, but with fish that are going to be over-slot, definitely over-slot. I mean, the average fish down there is probably about 36 inches long.
Okay. Well, anyway, Josh, I think that's about all we're going to get to today. Any last words of advice for somebody very quickly?
Certainly.
That was your advice?
Wise guy, eh?
Okay. Anyway, boys and girls, I'm Fishing Fry.
Well, now take.
I'm Captain Josh Olive.
You can contact Fish Frank at fishandfranks.com, or.
And you can reach me through my website, fishcoach.net.
That's fishcoach.net. N-E-T. Like you land a fish in the
like
net.
Like fishing. Derp.
Yes. So anyway, Fishing Frank, Josh, thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll be back next Monday and talk to you then.
About something. Day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day. We'll have no need to call the road when we get to the fishing hole. There'll be you, me, and old dog Trey to do the time away. If we don't hook a perch or bass, we'll cool our toes in dewy grass, or else pull up a weed to chaw and maybe set and jaw. Hang around, taking our ease, watching that hound, a scratching at his fleet. Come on, take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.